It's fascinating to me how easily someone in one religion can find the fallacies and biases in another religion.
I think that what's fascinating,
you're razor sharp on your criticism of Islam here.
Yeah, but what I find fascinating, Jeff, is that you recognize that with other religions, but you don't do it with your own. Because that may be the case.
I'm just saying, and there's that confirmation bias coming up again.
This is Apologetics Live. To answer your questions, your host of Striving for Eternity, Andrew Rappaport.
We are live, Apologetics Live, coming to you over the internet, answering your questions, challenges, or whatever else you may throw our way. We're glad to have you here. Encourage you guys to come on in, ask any questions that you have. Simple way to do that. Just go to apologeticslive.com. I am Andrew Rappaport. I'm your host for Apologetics Live. I don't know. We're not sure if Matt's coming in tonight. Matt Slick from Karm.org. He hopefully will be in a bit, but he's had a rather rough day today. Actually, just as I say that, he's just sent me a text and said, stuck on the phone. So Matt's on the phone. I think I just got a word. I got a word. And it says Matt's stuck on the phone. For any of you who are in the charismatic movement, you know what it means when someone says they have a word. All right. So with that, until Matt comes in, I'm going to deal with, an interesting topic, I think, and we'll see what you guys think. But, I'm going to try to see if I can get that. So I should let you guys know that we do this every Thursday night. We try to answer any questions that you have, any challenges. My recommendation is to come in early. I think last week before, we had someone that had some questions, but he waited till like the end to join in and only had a couple minutes left. If you get in earlier, you actually get more time to ask questions or give challenges. So, my encouragement to you is to join us. And that would easy enough to do to join and asking questions. Just go to apologeticslive.com and you'd be able to join us there. So what I want to do is go over some things and then what I'd like to do until some folks come in is I would like to go over an issue called Black liberation theology, which is essential to understand when people talk about social justice and talk about critical race theory, things like that. And so you have to understand the background for some of this stuff. It's not easy for everyone to understand. So that is my plan to cover that. If you have questions on social justice, Black liberation theology, critical race theory, I'm going to be addressing some of that, but it is an open Q&A. So any questions that you may have, whatever they may be, maybe I can answer them. Maybe I can't, but whatever it is, I will try to answer them. And that's what we're going to do here. So I do want to give you guys an announcement. Coming on the 15th of December, we're going to be having a contest with all the podcasters in the Christian podcast community. Let's see if I could bring up, it would have been good if I had this up already, but I didn't plan on that. So let me share a screen and I'll show you if I can figure out which screen I'm going to share. There we go. So let's share this screen. You can see my screen. This is, if you go to, the website to get to this is bit.ly.com. That's bit.ly.com/CPC. CPC stands for Christian Podcast Community. CPC contest. And if you go there, bit.ly.com/CPC contest. If you go there, you will receive this page. You'll get to this page. And it says that this starts in 9 days from today. And you go, well, what are you showing us this for? Well, the contest hasn't started running, but we are giving away, doing a theology evangelism giveaway. We're going to have a ton of different things for you to give away. And if you want to give them away, if you want to receive them, there's going to be a whole bunch in nine days, a whole bunch of things you could do to enter. But I want to show you the list. Here's a picture of them, but here is the full list. I just want to show you what we're giving away. You can see the picture there with some of the materials. There's actually, you see here, How to Answer the Fool. That's a movie, a film there. And behind it is a whole bunch of other DVDs, CDs, films, and things like that. You have some flash drives from Living Waters and Justin Peters. You have a bunch of books here from MacArthur, Greg Kokel, Justin Peters, some heretic named Andrew Rappaport. But there's a whole bunch of books here. We have over $750 worth of books. Actually, what we just added in today is a book from Alan Nelson, Before the Throne. His latest book is now included in this. So we've been adding to this, and we'll probably continue adding to this. And so there's a long list here. So we got 27 books currently being given away. 5 DVDs, and those DVDs are actually, there's more, because one of them is a conference series that has several DVDs in there. There's a bunch of CDs, 16 CDs, and again, there's a conference series in there, so there's more than that. And then 3 flash drives. So this is all the stuff that we're giving away. And again, you can get to it by going to bit.ly/CPC contest. And if you do that, you'll be able to get to this and be able to see everything that we're giving away. We want to let you know that, because you're saying, but it doesn't start for 9 days from today. But on December 15th, you want to get in. There are going to be some things you can do to enter every single day, and you get more entries for doing so. And so there's different points that you get for different entries, and there's like over 100 different ways to enter. So there's plenty of options for you. So that's something we just want to give you there. So I encourage you to check that out in 9 days, and that way you can see that. So just trying to read the comments. Someone's saying, I'll watch on an Apple TV. Okay. But if you want to join us and ask any questions and challenges, I recommend that you go to apologeticslive.com. That's where you get in. There's a link to join in and ask questions. And so until we have some folks, there's usually folks don't come in right away, which I, again, recommend you get in right away. That's when you can get your questions answered. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to torture many of you. And because some of you will find this to be torturous and others may not. Maybe some of you are going to be agreeing with critical race theory and Black liberation theology. Someone's asking when the contest dates start again. So the dates of the contest are December 15th. But I guess what I didn't say is, when does it end? It ends the end of February. So we're going to have you're going to have half of December. You know, Christmas time, you're going to be focused on family. So those of you who really want this are going to make sure you're sharing it over the holidays, while the other people are going to wait until January to kick in. But you'll have all of January, all of February. We're going to do this. It's a leap year, folks. So we're going to do it on February 30th. Some of you figured out there is no February 30th. So we will do the drawing on the 29th of February. So maybe some of you have heard of the idea of Black liberation theology or critical race theory, social justice, intersectionality. These are all terms you're hearing more and more, and these are terms that are not going to go away. In fact, if you are watching the Democrat National Committee's debates, you're hearing these things come up. It is kind of funny. If you watch those debates, they just figured out that Elizabeth Warren is white, because the only Black woman is out of the race now. And they're saying that the Democrats are, they're basically attacking their own now. They're basically going after the Democrats and saying that they're not black enough, because I think all of the black, all the African Americans have now dropped out. Maybe the only one that may still be in this African American is, unfortunately, the senator of my state. So we have, I don't know if Cory Booker's still in the race or not, but, so that may be the only one. I don't know, but the argument that they're even going after is they're saying that there's not enough African Americans who are running, that somehow that is showing that the Democrat Party may be racist. And this is a thinking maybe you've heard around, where somehow there has to be enough African Americans, or enough, you know, if you listen to GLAD had a, I forget what it stands for, but it's like gay, lesbian, I forget, but it's like some action committee to promote homosexuality. And so what you end up seeing is that they are saying there's not enough homosexuals in the movie industry, and therefore they should do something about that, that, somehow they got to correct that problem, which not sure it's exactly a problem, but they are arguing that there's only 20% representation of people who practice homosexuality inside of Hollywood movies. Now, think about that. 20% of the movies are played by people that practice homosexuality, or they're representing homosexuality in presenting it in the movie. And yet, when you look in America, we had a recent census that came out and basically reveals that those who are in homosexual relationships are basically 0.03 or 0.3. I forget, but let's go with 0.3. That's higher. 0.3% of America. So 0.3% of America, and yet they have 20% representation in Hollywood. And they argue that you'll hear this argument that somehow if you don't have enough females or African Americans or homosexuals or whichever the victimized group that they're arguing for, if you don't have enough of them being represented, somehow you're racist, you're sexist, you're whatever. And this is where critical thinking or critical race theory comes in, where you start to see this, you see this playing out. And so we end up seeing a lot of the what's called black liberation theology. It comes from a man, James Cone. And what I want to do is give you some of what he writes so that you can see where this comes from and see a little bit about why this isn't going to go away and there's no end to it. There's no end game. So this is, I'm going to read some quotes here today from James Cone's book, Black Theology, Black Power. And so what he's arguing for is he's arguing for basically for this black power that he says that we need to have. And some of the things that you see, he's going to talk about things. Maybe you've heard people talk about white supremacy. And the thing that you have to understand with this, when you read his writings and you read what they say, their arguments are really stuck, I would argue, in a century old arguments. They're arguing that African Americans, or blacks, because it's black power, that the reason for black power is because blacks are not treated as human. They are subhuman in America. And because of that, that's going to be an issue. They're also not equally represented in their voting, which I if you think about those two issues, yes, that was centuries ago an issue where blacks were treated as if they were not human beings, almost. No, actually, exactly, shall we say, like children in the womb today, where children in the womb are told they're not really human. They're subhuman. By the way, African-Americans at least in America, are aborted at the largest number of any group. So if African-Americans really were believing that, then what we should see is we should see them being against abortion in killing off so many of their own. So there's a whole bunch of quotes here that we could get into, and I'm trying to not take the really long ones because that could take too long to read. So some things you end up seeing here is, here's a quote that you have. Black power. What does black power mean? According to James Cone, quote, black power means black freedom, black self-determination, wherein black people no longer view themselves as without human dignity, but as men, human beings with an ability to carve out their own destiny, unquote. Now, let's break that quote down and examine. He's saying that black power is freedom, black freedom. How's he defining black freedom? As by self-determination. Well, who's determining things for these blacks right now? In fact, something to think about. If you look at this, you have many African Americans that what they end up doing is they will be conservative. And what do we hear when you have African-Americans that are conservative? They're an Uncle Tom. They're an Oreo, black on the outside, white on the inside, because they're not voting the proper way. Well, then is this really about self-determination, or is this about a political agenda? Because what you end up seeing here is that they're arguing for, and someone in the chat is even saying, and look at how they treat, how they attack black American Candace Owen. And that's a great example. So Matt's in here saying that he texted me, when I take a breath, he'll come in. Well, I sent Matt the URL. He's got to check his texts. All right. So what you end up seeing is, how do they treat Candace Owen? And anyone that wants to join, just go to apologeticslive.com. The link is there. When we get some folks in, Andrew's in here right now, but when we get, he always lets me know when he's got questions. But oh, here comes Matt. There we go. And so if anyone wants to join and ask questions, we could discuss those things. So let me and we'll see what Matt thinks about this quote. Matt, did you get a chance to hear the quote that I read or no?
A little bit.
Okay.
Past 30 seconds, I'm going to get here.
Okay. So here's the thing you end up seeing with this black power when you hear folks talk about this. You have to ask the question of, are they being treated or viewing themselves as not having human dignity? If that's the case, where's that coming from? Where is it coming from that African Americans are not being treated with dignity? Now, the issue here that you see is this becomes a ever moving target, because when you say that someone doesn't view themselves as having a certain amount of dignity, well, they can just change. Once they get to one level of dignity, they change it and say, well, I still don't feel like I have enough dignity because I need something else. The argue that this is something that can realistically never be achieved. Why? James Cone will say, and if I can find the quote, I'll quote him, but he's going to argue that that there never in America will there be whites who will ever see African Americans or blacks as being human. And so what he argues, he'll say this about black power. Black power is, quote, black power then is a humanizing force because it is the black man's attempt to affirm his being, unquote. But who is it that's dehumanizing them? It's not the whites. It's themselves. When they're saying that they don't have this dignity that they expect. But, you know, Matt, you have shared this many times. You grew up with a last name Slick, moving around from home to home to home because your dad was in the military. And so that caused you to, let's put it this way. Did everybody always show dignity to you?
Did everybody show what? I didn't miss the last
dignity.
Word. Oh, heck no.
Right.
I was treated so badly so much that, and I was also skinny, bucktooth, and because I moved, you know, 26 times before I was 12, 12 different elementary schools. I was treated so badly by so many people that I didn't stop having nightmares of being murdered till I was 35. So,
yeah. So, and you're not black, right? So,
no, I was white. It was,
yeah.
In fact, it was the white people that gave me the worst trouble.
See, but now, and this becomes the thing is that the main problem with this whole thinking is how do you get around the fact that who gets to define what dignity is? So, you know, when you have people arguing like this, Matt, what becomes the main problem with this way that they define dignity?
Well, it's subjective. And, you know, the thing is, if you can define dignity, like I was listening to what you were saying with this guy, you know, I would sit down with him and say, well, what definition do you have? When would the criteria be met? Why is the definition the right one? These are serious questions. And plus, there's a lot of black people who don't think whites are human. Some of the BHI people, they don't think that whites are human. Some people think that whites are devils. I mean, it happens all over the place. Nobody's exempt from being prejudiced.
When people start using the prejudice to start saying, well, I'm of a victim status and therefore I need to get treated better or I need extra privileges. Because I think the thing here is the people are not looking for equal rights. They're looking for extra rights.
Right. Well, I was treated badly left and right, upside down, backwards, forwards for years and years and years.
That was just me being friends with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, it just took me a long time to just realize no one's going to help me. I got to help myself. I got to, you know, I wish people would stop whining. The white trash, the black trash, the brown trash, the yellow trash, whatever you want to say, you know, just stop whining. Do what you got to do to, you know, to help yourself. Who else is going to help you? You want handouts? Because this idea of, you know, this in this case with this black guy, well, what does he want? He wants the culture to change to help them. So he's saying, wait a minute, I want dignity. So that, is he saying, so that we can have everybody else change everything so that we're elevated. But that's not dignity. That's just a helping hand. Doesn't help your self dignity in that. I didn't like to have to do that when I had to have, when I was in seminary and I had to have food stamps kind of stuff to survive, trying to provide my family. I didn't like that, but you got to do what you got to do. But anyway, I'm rambling. That kind of stuff really just annoys me. I wish I'd stop whining.
But see, where I see this is really being dangerous is you're starting to see some of this creep into the church. Now it's not even creeping in, but you have so much of the same victimizing mentality coming out where now it's like, I was dealing with this on Twitter where, you know, people are saying that if I have the nerve, Matt, to say that God has ordained different roles between men and women in the church, that I'm somehow am an abuser of women. I'm abusing women. How am I abusing women? Just because that view suppresses them. And I had this lady that told me this and I said, well, she said, when you say that a woman has to submit to a man, that's abuse. I said, so are you saying when in Ephesians, Paul says in Ephesians 5:21, that we're to submit to one another, that we're all abusing one another? She's like, well, no, that has the idea of that we would show preference to one another. And I said, yeah. Okay, so then what does it mean in a couple of verses later? She's like, that means he's got to, the wife has to obey. He forces her to obey. And I'm like, that's not what it means. Like, we now established, you understand that what submit means, that it's to, that you put yourself under another person. And yet, when it comes to husband and wife, you're saying it's the husband who's doing the forcing when the reference in the text is the wife does, the wife is the actor. So she knows the differences in the terms, but purposely uses that because it creates this emotional response. And this is what we're seeing a lot of to try to force churches to accept female pastors.
Oh, yeah, I was on the, that's why I was late getting in here, dealing with an issue about somebody with a pastor, a woman pastor thing. But yeah, it's, people don't realize submission is voluntary. And if submission is bad, then, and it's an abusive thing, then was Jesus under a system of abuse when he submitted to the will of the Father?
Well, that's exactly that was exactly the thing that I had said. I pointed out to her was the fact that Christ submits to the Father. Is that abuse? Is God the Father an abuser? Now, after I put that out there, she stopped responding. Right. Because and I challenged them. I said, come on in to hear. One of the guys, it was very interesting. And I'll be curious what your thought is on this, Matt. So how would you have handled this situation? So I'm talking with a guy. He's arguing for women being equal in authority in the church. They could be pastors and preachers. And he rejects what Paul says. I said, well, that's what God wrote. And he said, no, he didn't. So now he doesn't even believe it's God's word. He doesn't believe, he says that the Bible contains discrepancies. So here's his two discrepancies. Ready? One was that the Bible teaches that the earth is a round flat disc. Okay. Now this is the irony. He told me I'm not scholarly. I'm not, but he is, because what he gave me was a picture of a comment, like a study Bible with notes. And so the notes were in, I think it was Isaiah, where it says the earth is round, and the notes explain it's a flat disc. I'm like, that's not the Bible. That's commentary. Like, he doesn't understand that difference. His other argument of a discrepancy is that with Noah's ark, you have animals coming on two by two, but some, it says there's two by, they all go on two by two. But there's certain animals that you have pairs, and certain animals, you male, female, certain animals where you have seven of them. And so seven's an odd number. You can't have them go on two by two. So how would you handle that? Those two discrepancies that he claims are discrepancies.
It's easy. Take your right hand, put it in front of your face. Look to your left and slap yourself upside the head. Yeah, you did it right. I mean, come on. It's just, those are not discrepancies. Those are just facts. He's just looking for something to complain about. That's all. He's got an agenda over scripture. And that's what needs to be focused on, is that, I think, is that you just have a desire to war against God's word. You have a desire to call God a liar. You have a desire to say God's not capable of keeping his word intact and secure and true. So you're the one who's under judgment from God for your heresy and your lies against him. And, that's what I say to people, because that's, I think they need a blast between the eyes sometimes.
So let me give you some quotes from James Cone, and I'll let you kind of respond with some of these things. And again, folks, if you want to come in and ask any questions, we're doing an open Q&A tonight. You just go to apologeticslive.com. You can watch there. You can join. The link to join using StreamYard is there. So here's, I'm just going to try to look for some good quotes to give you. So, here's one. He says, black power. So, let me just say it's in quotes, right? Quote, black power, in short, is an attitude, an inward affirmation of the essential worth of blackness. It means that the black man will not be poisoned by the stereotypes that others have of him, unquote.
He's a racist.
Okay, now we get into that presents a problem when you talk with black liberation theology and critical race theory, because they will argue that blacks cannot be racist. It's impossible.
I just say, I'm sorry, but you're a racist.
So when they say that, Matt, and you're saying they're racist, they're saying they can't be. What is, for folks who may be struggling with this, what becomes the issue? How can you be so absolute? Like, what is it that you're doing to say they're racist, and yet they're saying they're not? Because there's a clear thing that's being broken down there.
what they're doing is just simply saying that because they're black, that that's why they should have blah, 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 blah. That's racism. That's what racism is, saying because of a person's race, skin color, which I don't agree there's races. There's only one race, a human race. That's my position. But for this context, we're using the term race in that sense. So he's fomenting and furthering racism is all he's doing in his illogic, in his stupidity, and he needs to repent. And I would just call him straight out and say, you're a racist. And you could say, well, I can't be a racist. Yes, you can. And denying it doesn't make it go away. You're a racist because you're trying to say people because of their skin color. That's what racism is. You're a racist.
Okay, so first off, Humble Clay says Matt's 100% correct. So there you go.
It's only correct if Humble Clay is a black person. Then it carries weight, because logic is dependent upon your race, apparently, also.
Well, okay, so what you just did there was you gave a definition for racism, and it would be the historical definition for racism, because your racism was defined on skin color, of stereotyping people and restricting them on things because of the color of their skin.
Or saying one race is superior to another race.
Yes, that's what they would say white supremacy is, right?
Well, white supremacy is racism.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it should be abolished.
But then how logically, if white, and this is the thing, white supremacy is supposedly racist, but then isn't black power? Because is that not saying that the black man needs to be superior?
Yeah, that's racism too. What if we said white power? That's racist. Black power, that's not racist. White people should be given certain percentages of jobs. Well, that's racism. Black should be given certain percentages of jobs. And that's not racism. That's equality. You know, the double standard, that kind of thing.
So what you end up seeing is they're playing with a different definition than you.
Yeah, they're not being logical. They have an agenda. See, there's a difference between logic and agenda. People have agendas. They want something to be promoted. And logic, truth, facts, scripture are often trampled underfoot at the necessity of their agenda. And so what's their agenda? It's a racist agenda to promote black people. They say to the equality of white. Well, what does that mean? I mean, what does that mean? You know, I used to go to my martial arts. There was a black guy we'd work out with. I insulted him like I did anybody else in there. He took shots at me like anybody else. There was no racism there. We were equal. He'd come over. He would go do things with my white daughter. I didn't care. I had to watch them. My white daughter would take martial arts with us and see he and she wrestle on the ground. You know, in martial arts, you do that kind of a thing as you're learning lessons. I don't care. You know, what's equality? An attitude? Is it a forced attitude? What's equality? What do they mean? What do they mean? You know, these terms have to be examined. I just get so tired of the mamby-pamby illogic that comes from so many people who think that they're being great and social justice idiocy It's just like, I wish he'd stop, you know?
Well, I think one of the things that, you know, that I see with this quote that they have here, right here, they're saying black power is an attitude. Okay. And
wait, what's the attitude? What's the attitude?
They just say it's an attitude, an inward affirmation of the essential worth of blackness. But how do you define blackness? Well,
then
it's an attitude.
I'm for that. I like blackness. My daughters think that black guys are really attractive. Okay. So they must, what was it? That's being black. What was it? What's the term he was saying it was?
Black power.
Then they affirm black power.
Well, and that's the thing that for whites to affirm black power, they would have to say that they, because part of this is that black power is also, as we saw earlier, it's saying that whites don't accept the blacks as being human. And yet they do
blacks
see.
Blacks are not human? Who says blacks aren't human?
Well, this is the whole argument for black power that James Cone makes, is that blacks in America are not seen as being human beings. And well, and
who says that? Which would show me some people who say blacks aren't humans. I mean, I like to see that.
Well, I actually may have that soon because I was talking to a guy last Sunday about some of the stuff I'm reading in James Cone. And, you know, what you ended up seeing is he said, oh, well, blacks aren't human. Blacks aren't treated as being human.
Like, are treated as being human, considering not being human is different. That's interpretation, and there's a difference there.
Yeah. So what you end up seeing, though, is that the way they end up viewing things is to say that their thinking says that whites don't treat them as humans, but it also says that whites will never treat them as being humans. And that becomes the dilemma. It becomes something that you can never get out of. But the other part of this definition that's interesting, it says that black power, it means that the black man will not be poisoned by stereotypes of what others have. Now, here's the question. Is this not a stereotype?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so here you have some, logically, this becomes a self-defeating argument, right? It crumbles on its own because the argument that they're not supposed to have stereotypes of blacks, but blacks can have the stereotypes of whites, right. Or of blacks as well. And this is, oh, go ahead.
No, I'm with you. Double standard.
So far we've seen that this thinking, Matt, you've shown that it requires to a subjective standard, not an objective one. Therefore, it can mean anything to anyone. We see that it ends up breaking logical things because they're arguing for not having stereotypes as they stereotype. So that becomes an illogical argument. So if they have a subjective standard, this is something that never ends. It you'd never come to a point where you can conclude this, because if they're saying racism has nothing to do with skin color anymore, now it's starting to do with how you think politically, how much money you make.
It reminds me of the novel 1984. Mm-hmm. There's, okay. Well, there's a phrase.
Newspeak.
Newspeak, thank you. I wanted to say think speak, but it's newspeak. Yeah, what they would do in 1984, everybody should read that novel. Everybody should. Seriously. It's not because it's cool. No, you should read it. It's brilliantly done. But yeah, newspeak. Yeah, they would just make it 2 + 2 = 5. They would work until you believed it by propaganda, illogical. Yeah.
They would have they'd have the propaganda machine, and the main character works in the right. field where he has to come up with replace the news. So they would change a word. So let's put it in the way we're using this now. You have the word racism, which used to mean that you stereotype people and treat them different because of some, you know, either color of skin, facial, whatever. And that's what racism is. But now racism is an economic thing. And so what newspeak would be is where everybody just changes the definition, and now everyone just starts accepting it. And, you know, people, Matt, I got to tell you, when I read 1984, I was like, this is ridiculous. Okay. Back then, this is before, yeah. TVs that would be able to, you know, cause they had these devices of a TV that actually had cameras and microphones in it to listen in on people. Oh, wait, that's smart TVs. Not too far-fetched anymore. Yeah. Smart TVs. And part of the thing is, I said, there's no way you can convince people to just change the meanings of words that quickly. And
it can happen.
It is happening. Look at the whole issue with the genders now. I mean, this is brand new. It's, you've never seen this in history, where all of a sudden people are saying, well, I'm born male, but I identify as female. Now, you had people that dressed as the opposite gender, but they're actually saying they biologically are a different gender. They're redefining what it means to be male or female.
That reminds me, because I just realized recently that I identify as a lesbian who is actually part black, part Asian, and a little Hispanic mixture, and I'm stuck in a white man's body. So now what do I do? Because that's why I like women now.
Well, see, but here's the problem, Matt. Being a white male, you can't make that claim. You see, if you're white, you can't claim that you identify to be black. We you know, what was it, the head of the NCAAP, right? She was actually white, and you know, she had her hair, you know, permed into an afro, and she identifies as black. And they were like, you can't do it. That's making less of blackness. So, you know,
that's called stupidification.
Yeah. I mean, Angela here says, I'm so sick of all this nonsense. I've been thinking about going off the grid, LOL. But it is. It's crazy. Nice. You know,
I want to go off the grid. That'd be nice. Have a nice, I've been watching Off the Grid shows. He's got me. I'm like, I want to go off the grid in Hawaii someplace. Oh, man.
No, that's not going off the grid, Matt. That's trying to relax and enjoy the beach.
I could be off the grid, solar powered. I need an internet connection. I get that.
Wait, stop. Off the grid and internet don't work, Matt.
I need internet connection, but all my power and everything would be right there, and I would need a jacuzzi and a hammock.
So what you see here, folks, is this is called newspeak. Matt is redefining what off the grid means.
Yeah, I want the way I want it. Yeah, that's right, and I do want. I need solar power and heated water. I need all those LED lights, but I got to have internet because, you know, I got to make a living.
See, but off the grid means not being on the grid, like no electricity. No.
They have their own electricity.
Well, okay. They can make their own electricity, but you know, part of the grid is like, you know, the internet is the grid.
I don't know. I'm going to redefine the way I want, and I don't accept that.
Now, what gives you the right to redefine that?
My subjective preference.
Okay, but my subjective preference says that you can't redefine that. So which one of us is right?
There's an obvious answer. Because I'm slicker than you, I win.
Oh, no. We know that's not true.
Yeah, I'm slick.
Do we need to play the clip that proves that?
What are you talking about? My last name's Slick. I'm Slick. That's what it is.
Well... All right, let's see if others think. This is from the council, when you were on the council.
Was Andrew the one that helped you get the podcast back up?
Yeah, he did get the podcast. He didn't help me, he did it.
Yeah. No, don't you think you owe him a dinner for that?
Oh, no, he didn't.
Got him.
So when we look at which one of us is slick.
No. That just means I owe you dinner. That doesn't mean that I'm not slicker than you.
Well, you haven't outslicked me yet on that one.
Yeah, well, at times, yeah, we're not done yet. But
all right. So, I mean, I hope that folks are seeing what is going on. When you and I start trying to argue from a subjective view, there is no right anymore.
Well, you can't say there is no right if we're offering subjectivism, because that would mean that there's no right. We should be absolute, not subjective. You can't say correct. That.
But when what they are doing is saying that you're a racist, in this case, I'll give you the other case, because I know you hold to the fact that women are, you know, shouldn't be pastors, and people would say, you know, that isn't makes you an abuser. So. Someone says you're an abuser. Are you an abuser?
No, I'm biblical.
Yeah, and I don't think
What I need to do is have an award, a diaper, you know, bronze diaper, the Diaperinian Award. Just send it to people, you know. And for a little extra money, you can get them filled with something.
All right. we're going to leave that in people's imagination. They should be able to figure out what that's going to be filled with. But this really does become the problem, is that if someone removes absolute standards and then tries to have arguments like this about right and wrong, truth and falsehood, it completely breaks down.
Yeah.
You know, and what ends up happening with this whole Black Power issue is it puts you in a position where they're still arguing the arguments that were true when people were slaves because of the color of their skin.
Yeah, yeah.
That they weren't treated as human. However, again, as I said earlier in the show, we have that teaching today. If people say that, if there are people, and there are, these the blacks who are pushing for Black Power and saying that the blacks have to be given extra rights or treated better or being given extra privilege because of the fact that they're not treated as being human beings, the question is, how do you define that? How do you get to say that someone else isn't treating you like a human being? Because what we see today is blacks and whites in America are not treating one as if one is enslaved to the other, or one doesn't have equal rights as the other. Now, they're going to argue that though the laws allow for that, well, the laws also allow for one group of people to be told that they are not humans in America today. And it's called children in the womb.
Yeah.
Children are told they are not human, and they could be killed and murdered. And so what you end up seeing with abortion is you end up seeing that people will argue the very thing they're arguing against here. If those who argue for Black Power were also anti-abortionists, they would at least be consistent. But they're arguing, as they have equal rights and equal dignity under the law, yet they also promote abortion because more African Americans are being aborted than whites. Okay, percentage wise, when we look at the percentage of America. And so you end up looking at this and you see those percentages, there's way more African Americans that are being aborted than there are as far as the total abortions than there are the percentage of whites versus blacks in America. So it's larger there. They're supporting the abortion, and yet abortion says human beings are not human beings.
Yeah. Yeah, that's bad. Good point. Someone in the text wrote, what if you do if you're, say, a mulatto or a quatrain? You know, what do you do then? You're a mixed race.
Well, that would be my kids, right? I mean, my kids would.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. That's right. Your kids are mixed race.
Because I'm from a Russian Romanian background. My wife is from Hong Kong, so she'd be from a Chinese background. My kids are a mix. What are they? You know, and here's
sure are better looking than you. That's for sure.
That I agree. Here was an interesting thing, Matt. When my kids were applying for college, we tried to get scholarships as minorities. Right, Asians are. Should be a minority because they're not as many, right? Isn't that, that's the definition of a minority. Minority is fewer than the majority, right? You know, there's less of them. I literally was told that my kids wouldn't apply because they're not a minority. And I said, what makes them not a minority? They're Asian. And the response I got back is they have an education.
What?
And I went, but education doesn't define whether someone's a minority. That's a numerical thing. And so what you end up seeing is you have them redefining what it means to be a minority to being about education levels and finances.
Yeah. It's what's it called? You call it newspeak. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Humble Clay says, I believe it's in New York that more black babies are aborted than born. And I believe, I think he's correct there.
Yeah.
And so someone is saying, yeah, Ethan Tanner says, should I watch Prescribed Truth or this? Oh, well, Prescribed Truth is if he is live right now, that explains why he didn't join me. I sent him a text and said to get in here because he should be here. Prescribed Truth is the podcast from Jamal Bandy. Oh, should we do this, Matt? Do you feel like being really triggered?
I don't know. I'm tired tonight, so it's one of those nights for me, but
I can tell. This would be fun to do. For folks who don't know Prescribed Truth, I'm going to pull up a video. Where is it? So Prescribed Truth has I must have spelled this wrong. So he has a YouTube channel called Prescribed Truth, and he's got a, if I could spell this right, he's got a series. All right, I'm just going to look for Woke Brother. I'm typing it wrong. Let's see. Oh, here it is. So let's see if we can figure out which one of these. Okay, so let me bring this up, Matt. This will be fun. I will share this so you can watch this. But I got to redirect the audio. So this is one of the, he does this as a complete parody. Okay. And this is Jamal Bandy from The Prescribed Truth. And this is, he's got a whole series called Woke Brother. And, or Brother. He corrected me on that. It's Woke Brother, not Brother. So he addresses, I think in this one, I'll see if I grab the right one, but he addresses in here different articles, news articles that are real articles that are out there. And he ends up, he is doing a complete parody on what it means to be a woke person.
Okay. And
he's gotten a lot of criticism because some people didn't realize it was a parody. So some people were saying he was extremely racist, and others, others that are woke were saying that he's not, that he's not representing them right. So you let me know if you want to stop at any point and interact with what he's saying, or if you just want to sit, watch, and laugh and enjoy.
Well, can you hold real fast? Yeah. Because Anik just told me that there's a package I got to get from outside. Otherwise, someone's going to steal it. You know, porch pirates. Right, right. I'll walk downstairs with my portable.
I'll still be able to listen. So so while he's gone, let me read a couple more quotes that I wanted to get to. So here's some other quotes from James Cohn, and that we end up seeing. So he says, "It is necessary to describe a prior mood of the black man in a white society when he first awakens to his place in America and feels sharply the absolute contradiction between what it is and what ought to be, or recognizes the inconsistency between his view of himself as a man and America's description of him as a thing. His immediate reaction is a feeling of absurdity," unquote. Now, what you end up seeing there is he's arguing for slavery, but slavery ended a long time ago in America. He's describing America as having a view that a black man is just a thing. And this is one of the things you see. Their arguments are still based in slavery, or when there was not equal rights to vote, because they say they don't have equal representation. But the equal representation argument came from not having an ability to vote. So you end up seeing that they are still using arguments from generations ago and not dealing with current day America. James Cohn ended up saying this: "There's no place in America where a black man can go for escape," unquote. Well, if there's nowhere that he can go in America, then, realistically, if you take black power literally and see what they're saying, if there's no place in America for a black man to escape the whiteness, then the only thing that they should do is leave. I mean, that's it. That's the only option. But they're not leaving. They want to change America. But yet they say that it can never change. There's nowhere to escape. But yet they're going to try to change that. You see, so this becomes a thing. This is what shows you that this is not about a theology. Remember, the name of this book is Black Theology and Black Power. And so it's teaching a theology. And this is very anti-study of God. This is very much study of man, study of a political theory. But let's, Matt, you're going to get a kick out of this.
All right.
It's 4 minutes long.
So y'all been thinking it's a game the whole time. You didn't get the message, the memo that I sent last time. Now y'all keep asking, where's the injustice? Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to reveal it to you. Y'all are trying to go across this bridge on our backs. And it ain't happening. There's racial injustice against my people. Because blackness is where it's at. It's where it's always been at. I told y'all, wake up. That we ain't taking no more of your racism and your whiteness. And what I've come to realize is that this has been going on for years. And it's showing up in many different ways. I told y'all, we woke. It's the reason why y'all sleep. Now I'm going to show you something. I'm going to show you some more proof that your whiteness is perpetuating in evil, that your whiteness is hurting us in many ways, and y'all need to be held accountable. And that's what I'm here to do. Black men who experience racism age quicker than those who don't. That's evidence. See, you know what? You can't even see it right now, but I got gray hair growing in my head, and that's because of y'all. I'm aging quicker. I'm 30. I shouldn't have this gray hair in my head, but we aging quicker. And I know other black men who got gray hair at younger ages than that. It's because of the racism, having to struggle in life because of y'all.
Now, Matt, didn't you turn gray by about age 12?
No. So this guy is actually a parody? Sounds pretty serious.
Yeah, well, that's the whole part of it. He makes it sound so serious that people are believing it. But yeah, he's going to get some of the... But see, this is the thing. These quotes that you see here are from the Daily Mail. These are real things that are in the news that he's interacting with. That's the thing. He's taking real news articles and going through them. There's one about that's coming up that's classic. So
causing us stress. Told y'all, black people have to wait 32% longer than white people to cross the road. 32% longer. You telling me I can't cross the road because of your racism? Man, let me cross the road. If you see me finna cross the road, stop your car so I can walk across.
Is he in a crosswalk?
You do it for them white folks. Do it for me. You see me finna cross the road, stop your car, let me pass.
The funny thing about this, Matt, there's someone you and I both know, Chad Pridmore.
Yeah, I just had lunch with him today, as a matter of fact.
You got to tell him that you watched this video. So the guy that was doing his website, mm-hmm. he was checking out all the podcasts in the Christian podcast community, and he's looking at them, and because he wants to protect Chad, and he sees Prescribed Truth, so he goes out to hit this channel, and he watched this video, and he calls Chad and says, "Dude, you got to get away from those people. This guy's racist." He totally bought that it was like legit, and Chad is like, "No, it's got to be a joke. It's got to, you know." So we Chad was like laughing when he actually watched this to see that because there are some people that, I mean, these are real articles, and yet someone's here in the chat saying, "Is he serious?" Yeah, he's doing a parody, but this is the article that he's quoting says that. You know, black people have to wait 32% longer than white people to cross the street. You know, could it be that they walk slower? Could it be like, you know, and I don't know how they come to that conclusion either. So the next, I think it's the next one that cracks me up the most. I mean, when you know he's not serious, this one's really funny.
Y'all, racism, man, isn't affecting us on the road. Racism among drivers. Let me show you one more thing. Let me show you something. Racism making people fat. Look at this. This ain't from eating everything and overeating. This is from your racism. Your racism is making people overeat. Y'all don't even realize it.
Wow.
Own up and take accountability for your actions, white people. We're sick and tired. Y'all finding ways to kill us off. And that's how y'all doing it. Want to give us all these diet plans. No, don't give us no more diet plans. Stop your racism. Hating on the black man. Then we'll see change. Then we can lose weight. I'm tired of walking anyway. I'm tired of walking on these paths and walking for an hour and all that crap. When all you got to do is stop.
Wait a minute. Aren't sidewalks white?
I didn't think about that.
Sidewalks are white, so they're well, no, that should be good. That means a blacks can walk and trample underneath the whiteness of their feet, under their feet.
One of the videos he's got a picture of a African-American woman, and what was he saying? He was saying something with her, and then saying like the white man, the white man walks on the backs of blacks or something like that. he's got a whole series of these, but all right, so I'll stop that. But I mean, what you end up seeing there is, I mean, there's people that actually couldn't figure out that he was complete parody there. There were actually African-Americans who were saying, hey, look, you know, you shouldn't be saying that like that way, because whites won't be accepting of it. But they actually believe it. I just love when he grabs his cheek and says, I'm not fat because I'm stuffing my face. I'm fat because you're white privilege.
That's what it is. That's right.
But I mean, this is what you end up seeing with this whole idea and the whole movement is there's no way. And you're seeing this with those people that are trying to give in on the whole LGBTQ movement. They when you see people kind of cave. And you know, let's talk about the Mormon Church in Utah. So recently, Utah has given some policy where they're basically saying that, you know, different groups are not allowed to discriminate against LGBT. But for now, they have a clause that says that the church is excluded from that, right? And so that got passed. And what was the very first thing they said? It's a good start. Right? There was a recently, I don't know if you saw this, Matt, there was a guy who thinks he's a girl and he wants to use the girls' locker room. And he fought to, you know, be able to use the school wanted to do was set up a separate part of the locker room for him to use. And he said, no, you're discriminating. You have to treat me like I'm a woman. I'm a girl and I should be treated that way. He wants to be in the locker room while the girls are changing. So they passed the bill in the school 5-2 so that the one guy can use the girls' locker room and be in there when everyone's changing. And now all the girls are upset, but we got to make him feel good. So we don't care about all of the girls that don't want that, because they got to get changed in there. And they had one interview with a girl that broke down crying because she's like, you know, I'm on the swim team. I have to change and shower like twice a day in that locker room. And he's going to be in there just watching me. Like, I don't feel comfortable with that, but they don't care how these girls feel. It's placating to this. And what happens soon as they pass it, they asked him, they interview this kid and say, how do you feel? And he goes, well, this is a good start. You see, it's only the start. They argue, oh, well, we got to get this. Well, but it doesn't stop there.
No, it doesn't.
You know? And you have this with Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A decides that they're going to stop. Yeah, they're going to stop funding the Salvation Army, and I forget the other group, athletes. I forget the name of the
Christian athletes. Yeah,
Christian athletes. So they're going to stop funding them, and then it's like, what is the group say that was pushing it? Well, that's a good start, but you're not enough. Now you have to actually go out and condemn them.
That's right.
And promote ministries. So what do? They now start giving their money toward a pro-LGBT organization.
Yeah, that's why my wife and I stopped going there.
Yeah. And so, so what happens? Is it enough? No, it's not enough because you're supporting them, but you're not out there saying that this is a right. And that's the thing. So, you know, you're not going to placate this critical theory, the critical race theory, or now what's just being called critical theory, because they're going to constantly be moving the goalpost, and therefore you can never get to a point where you have it solved, because you're going to just keep seeing this move and move and move.
Yep, I agree with you. It's gonna be bad. I've been telling people on the radio show, don't think that the homos are gonna stop outside the church door. They're gonna come in the church. They're gonna start attacking in the church as well. The homosexual community. Mm-hmm. They're gonna. It's gonna be bad. Christians gotta fight back.
We have right now. If you watched the Democrat National Convention or not convention debates.
You mean the clown show?
Huh?
The clown show.
Yeah. What you had there is you actually had candidates saying that if someone doesn't support LGBTQ, if a church doesn't support that, then they should have their tax exempt status removed. You have Joe Biden saying that if someone doesn't support LGBTQ rights, that they should then be put on a terrorist watch list. Now, I don't know if folks may know this or not. But back under Barack Obama, we had a change of how people get put on the terrorist watch list. And you had organizations that used to be doing terrorism outside the country that were terrorizing America. Mostly it was dealing with things of people trying to bomb America or things like that. Now, what it means to be on the terrorist watch list under Obama was if you are against abortion, in other words, if you are a supporter of pro-life ministries, any organization that supported pro-life ministries was put on the terrorist watch list because it was a terrorist act to be against abortion. Now you have people saying it's a terrorist act to not support and celebrate LGBTQ.
Yep.
And this is, folks, this is where we're going. This is where it's going to be heading to. This is why we need to get the gospel out there, folks. We need to have the gospel permeating this land that people start repenting of this wickedness and start getting saved. The politicians will pretend to be Christian if enough people actually are Christian. But yeah, so we have some people here saying atheist groups get religious tax credit, don't they? They do. There are some atheist churches. I think there was one actually, but it had a split within the first year, and I think it's closed now. So, let's see. Jason Manning says something that LGBT community is doing that angers minorities is liking their so-called fight for equality with the civil rights of the black man's fight back in the 60s. And that's true. When the LGBTQ uses civil rights as the argument, they actually water down the argument for that the blacks are arguing for.
Right.
And so, Let's see. So if anyone wants to come in, ask any questions. Don't know where everyone is tonight. We got Andrew, but he's always in here and lets us know when he has questions. So here's a quote for you, Matt, because you said, do people actually say this? And so I'll give you James Cone in his own words. Okay. If I ever get you reading James Cone, you're going to kill me and go nuts. But I think you do. I mean, I'm reading this stuff because this intersectionality is not going away. Here's what James Cone says, quote, and certainly the history of the black white relations in this country from Civil War to present unmistakably show that as people, America has never intended for blacks to be free. To this day, in the eyes of most white Americans, the black man remains subhuman, unquote. From that day till today, in most whites. Now, here's the thing I find interesting, Matt. It was a majority of whites that freed the black slaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they died doing it.
Yeah. I mean, went to war, but it was still, there was a bunch of states, a bunch of whites that fought for the freedom of blacks. So how did these people fighting?
You know what?
Think that
the whites need to have reparations for that.
You got a good point there. Yes, we need to argue for no, and so it should be just northern. It should be northern whites, right? Because it was the northern states that fought.
Yeah, I don't think I qualify because I think my ancestors were in Louisiana. They came in from Germany, Louisiana. So. I won't get any reparations.
No, actually, Matt, you do. Let's think about this.
My dad's side was up north in Indiana. Okay, so I need reparations.
No, I'll tell you why you get reparations, Matt. Here's why. Because it was the Democrat Party that was the party of the KKK. It was the Democrat Party that didn't want blacks getting the rights to vote. It was the Republican Party that was formed over the slavery issue to freeing slaves. And ending slavery. So therefore, we should really do it this way. Here's what we do, Matt. This is a great solution to reparations. All the Democrats, every person who's a registered Democrat should pay reparations to African Americans.
That works. I like that idea.
I think that's a great solution since they were the ones that wanted to suppress them and to oppress them and to enslave them. They should be the ones to do that.
Starting with Barack Obama, he should start and set the example.
Yeah, because he's white.
Is he?
Well, I would argue he's more white than black because remember, he had a white mother and a black father, so he's half white, half black. But and this is an interesting thing, and I encourage you to read his own words, his own book. And now I forget the name of the book, but it was something to his father. But he basically grew up by his own words. He said he grew up with his white mother and white grandparents. He grew up in a white neighborhood. His mother, when he was about 14 or 15, felt he didn't understand black oppression. She had to take him to be taught how to be black. Now think about this, because their argument is that this is just inane. Like this is just part of being, like, we don't even realize as whites that we have white privilege and that we're racist. It's something that we don't even recognize supposedly. But what do you see here? You end up seeing in this that you have here people that have to, Barack Obama had to be taught how to be black. I mean, that's a crazy thing to think about, that he would have to be taught how to, you know, so it's not clear that he knew what that was. Wow. Right? He didn't know what it meant to be black. He had to be taught it. Well, if this is something that can be taught, then it doesn't have to do with their argument that this is part of whites suppressing and oppressing blacks. Yeah, here we go. Someone just said, Humble Clay said, Dreams of My Father. There's the title of the book. So, by the way, here's an interesting thing with that book, Matt, Dreams of My Father. He was the first African-American at the Harvard Law School, like paper or whatever.
The white nationalist paper?
Yeah, maybe it was. He was the first African-American to get some privilege, get some status at Harvard on Harvard Law. And so because of that, he was commissioned to write a book about how he got there, how he got to that point to be on the Harvard Law Review, I think it was what it's called. And so he got paid to write a book about how he got there. You know what he did instead? He wrote a book that was a memoir for a tribute to his father. He was paid for one thing and chose not to do it. And when they, kind of came to him and like, this wasn't what we paid you to do. Oh, you're being racist.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know how he got elected as senator? You know the history there?
No.
Love this one. So Barack Obama is running in the primaries against a very well-known, candidate. Now remember, Barack Obama's job was a mob organizer, right? He was a community, he did community outreaches and he would organize protests. That was his job. He realized that if he really wanted to be more effective, he needed to get a law degree. That's why he said in his own book, why he went to get the law degree. He got the law degree so he could be a better mob organizer. He goes in and does that. He does get into the Harvard Law Review, gets to be, I think he was an adjunct professor at Harvard for a semester or two. But he ended up realizing, and this is what he says in this book. This is why I say his book is amazing to read, because he's pretty open about why he did what he did. He recognized that there was I think it was a mayor up in Chicago that was African-American, but he talked like a white man. This is what Barack Obama said. And he realized that this guy was going to be elected. No one was going to be able to unseat him because he had the black vote, because they're expected to vote for a black man, but he could speak the white language and therefore he could get the white vote. And that he said he realized that since he was white enough, he could get a Senate seat and be there forever. And so what he did was he was running for Senate. He's running against a very popular Democrat. And so what all of a sudden, somehow, no one knows how, he gets his hands on sealed court records of this guy's divorce. And he goes to the guy's house. And all of a sudden, after that visit, it is announced that the other guy is dropping out of the race and supports Barack Obama. So Barack Obama now is running against a very well known Republican and someone that was looking like he was going to win. And then all of a sudden, somehow, magically, his sealed court documents of his divorce ends up in the news. And part of what comes out in there, he was married to a actress that was on, was it one of the Star Treks, Deep Space Nine, I believe. And what came out of that was that this Republican, when he was over in Europe, used to force his wife to have sex with him in public in bars. And that was one of the reasons she was divorcing him. And it's also one of the reasons she wanted it sealed so her kids never read that. But somehow it got unsealed. Sealed documents got in the hands of the media. No one knows how. And then that guy dropped out just before in the middle of the race or toward the end of the race. And now Barack Obama is basically running unopposed. They ended up getting Alan Keyes to come in from, he's actually, I think, from New York or somewhere, but he wasn't from Chicago. He moves in so he can run against them. And so that's how he actually got the Senate seat.
Interesting.
Yeah.
During little politics. Bit of history.
Yeah. So I'm going to bring Andrew in just to see if he's got any questions for us tonight. Hello, Andrew.
Hey. Not really questions, more statements, I think. I'm probably one of the few Australians who actually kind of stays in touch with sort of this process. It's a very, very interesting story about Obama. I had no idea of that either. And I guess some of those dirty laundry, shall we say, to quote, say, Don Henley, we probably wouldn't really want that aired either.
Yeah. No.
And I guess maybe that was pushing him out of the done to push him out of the race, because that's what we have, well, here when we had our own prime ministers stabbing each other in the back. So we had Kevin Rudd, then Julia Gillard, then she got stabbed in the back. It's a kind of hilarious sort of thing like that. And she was actually from Wales, I think, somehow, and that was her... That's how she got stabbed in the back.
Yeah.
Well, so it's kind of interesting. But yeah.
So someone's asking.
Yes, that's.
Yeah, Jason Manning's asking the question. He said, "Wasn't Harvard founded on as an evangelical university?"
And in order to train pastors.
Yeah, and what would that be called, Matt? For folks who may not know the term. Where they train pastors at the seminary. I meant at the graduate level. Instead, I gave away the word. You know, okay, so Matt, I know you've probably experienced this, but at our church, right? We're going through leadership training. We're all the guys that are members are basically going through. Everyone's going through like an ordination type thing. So we're learning all the books of the Bible, giving an overview of every book of the Bible and getting a quiz. And so we're going on a quiz of different books of the Bible. I'm done with the quiz. I'm waiting for everyone else to finish. I'm sitting with my pastor and I'm talking. And I wanted to say the question that came up was, what does the word Shema mean? Because from the Shema from Deuteronomy 6, and you have different choices. And so I start talking about that, and I was telling them like the Jewish view of that passage, but I couldn't remember to recite the passage. I didn't want to start at the beginning, because if I started with the first word, the Hebrew is Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. But if I start with that first word, I'm giving away whether it's C, or peace, or here, or I forget what the other one was. Obey, I think. And so I didn't want to give away what the word was, but I couldn't remember what the passage was if I started in the middle. And all of a sudden, I forgot the guys around me. And so I couldn't remember it. I'm trying to remember it. So I just started right at the beginning, and I started with Hero Israel. And all of a sudden everyone went, oh, thanks. But I couldn't remember the passage if I started in the middle.
Yeah, that's normal.
I had to start at the beginning, which gave away the word. So Jason Manning says, wow, how Harvard has fallen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, well, we could do one of two things, Matt, since no one's come in with any questions. We could either end early, or I could give you some more quotes of James Cone until you want to, like, research this stuff and realize that you need to do this for, to understand this, to deal with intersectionality.
Yeah, I'm so buried with so many things right now that there's a clog in the drain. Not much is getting done.
Oh no, we need you researching intersectionality and social justice. Who cares about NAR? Actually, I'll give you this. I would argue, Matt, that social justice will probably be a greater threat to the American church than NAR will be.
Might be. Could be. Yeah, it could be. There's a lot of problems. There's so much. I mean, obviously, to me, it's obvious that Satan's alive and well. He's working hard to destroy the Christian faith. But, man, I'll tell you, I feel like Sisyphus. pushing a rock uphill, and it always falls back. You never get up there. Yeah. There's so much heresy, you know.
Yeah. So, okay, we got a question that's... all right, so here's a question, Matt, from Tulip Doctrines of Grace. Question, where do you guys stand on replacement theology and Christian Reconstructionism? Ready, go.
I'd rather replace replacement theology with a more gracious biblical view that just says that God's not done with Israel yet because he's a God of covenant, not a God of dispensation. Not taking a shot at anything, but replacement theology deals with the idea that God is done with the church. I mean, tired. Done with Israel. So he's he's going to work differently now. And so the church is what has replaced Israel. But that's not true. God's not done with Israel yet. Not covenantally. He's not done. So I reject that. Reject replacement theology.
Yeah, so you know, I think that a lot of people mistakenly would say that there's two views I've seen where people mistakenly define replacement theology. One is where they'll say that the covenant theology view is and they'll argue that all people that hold to covenant theology believe that the church replaced Israel. So let me start with that one. You're a covenant theologian. Do you believe that the church replaced Israel?
No.
Okay. And I think that, and I'm going to argue, and I'm not a covenant theologian, I'm going to argue that people who make that claim do not understand covenant theology. So, Matt, what is the view in covenant theology between the relationship between Israel and the church?
Well, we would just say that God works covenantally with all his people, Israel and the people, the church, the elect, the invisible church. And so the relationship is that God has simply said he's not done with Israel yet. All Israel will be saved out of Romans 11:25, and it's just not done yet. So, you know, I know that there's some dispensationalists who hold to the same view that some covenantalists do, and some covenantalists will hold the same view that dispensationalists do in regard to the relationship of the church and Israel. My position is simply that the church has replaced Israel in some degree, but not in all. It definitely has replaced the church or Israel in the proclamation of the true Messiah, but it's not replaced the church, Israel covenantally, because God just hasn't. He's not done with them yet.
Well, and in covenant theology overall, they would hold to a view that there is one people of God with two administrations. So you'd hear people say that that Israel is the church of the in the Old Testament, and the church is Israel in the New. And so they would look at this as the one group of people, but that with two administrations. And so for many covenant theologians, they wouldn't see they wouldn't see the distinction between those two groups, that one replaces the other. Now, there's some who would also argue the replacement theology, I think falsely, against dispensationalists.
Yeah.
Because some will say that there are groups in the dispensational camp that will say that God is done with Israel. And so where you're going to see with this hyper-dispensationalism, they're actually going to say, to a point where they say, God's done with Israel and you shouldn't even be reading the Old Testament. You shouldn't read the Gospels because that was to Jews. You should only be reading the works of Paul.
Yeah.
And like Revelation and John, you know. So it's only the stuff written to Gentiles, because now we're of the Gentiles. So now that the church has completely replaced Israel and God's done with them. Again, now I'm going to argue from the dispensational perspective and say that's not the dispensational view. That's a false and hyper view that's radically wrong. I'll let Matt, as the covenant theologian, now.
No, I'm just going to agree with you. You're right. And that's not the proper position. You're absolutely correct.
Okay. Do you want to explain Christian Reconstructionism?
I don't really know what that is too much. I've never really had to deal with it too much. So I'll not go too far into it.
Okay. Let's see. So you're telling me we're not going to find it on Karm?
I don't know. I don't know. It might be there.
There's probably an article on Karm. Actually, here we go. Oh, this is brilliant. On Karm, Christian Reconstructionism Theonomy.
Who wrote it?
Oh, that's great. Let's see. This was written by, hold on. We're going to do one better. Let's just share the screen because that'd be way better to figure before we reveal who wrote it and see. There we go. So if you're looking on the screen, here it is. It is, let's get rid of that. And it is Christian Reconstructionism Theonomy. Christian Reconstructionism, also known as Theonomy, Rule of God's Law, Dominion Theology. So we have some.
Who wrote it?
Let's scroll down and see who wrote it. The big reveal. Oh, look at that. It is written by one Mr. Matt Slick.
You know, I've written stuff over the years, and I forget I even write things. I have a list of questions I have to answer, and what I have to do before I answer any of them, I have to go make sure I haven't already answered it, because I can't remember it all.
I'm trying to see if we could figure out if there's a date on here that we could find out when you put this up.
That's it'll great. Be years ago.
Oh. So, Matt, would you like me to read to you what you wrote?
Go ahead. I can't you read it anyway.
I'll just go down to the teaching here. So, Christian Reconstructionism, also known as Theonomy, is a highly controversial movement within some conservative Christian circles. It maintains that the world should be brought under, reconstructed, the Lord Jesus Christ in all areas, social, moral, political, judicial, military, family, art, education, music, etc. Christian Reconstructionism advocates the restoration of the Old Testament civil and moral laws in order to reconstruct present American society into an Old Testament type Mosaic form, and that the three main areas of society, family, church, government, should all be biblically modeled, the Bible being the sole standard. The world includes severe punishments for lawbreakers. Some Christian Reconstructionists would advocate death for adulterers, abortionists, idolaters, murderers, homosexuals, rapists, etc. So that's a pretty good article written by some guy that...
Yeah, I'm, as you're reading, I'm going, oh, that's right. I remember. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yep.
Now, you know, look, the reality is you've written so many articles at Karm over the years. I mean, it's there's so much out there that after what's Karm on 25 years now?
24. It's on its 25th year. It's already 24 years old.
Okay. So, yeah, again, we'll cut you in break. Maybe you don't remember every article you've written over that time.
Maybe.
Or maybe it's the fact that you're 62 years old and, you know, I mean, it's just,
I'll be 63 in like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, aging, it's just catching up to you.
Yeah, a lot of stuff's catching up to you. That's why I'm just beat today. It's been a rough day for a lot of things. But yeah, it's like, oh, man. Like I said, I have to go through. Did I write this already? And more I'm finding out, yeah, I have written on this already. And sometimes I already know I have. But, you know, I've written, I don't know, thousands of articles. So I just can't remember them all.
Now, here's the thing, Matt, with this, that for folks that do want to talk about this, when you talk to someone that is in believing this in the theonomy, there is a fallacy that sometimes you hear people do. The way they'll do this is they'll say, well, Matt, you believe in God's law, don't you?
Yeah.
Then you're a theonomist because that's theonomy.
Now, God's law. Yeah.
Theonomy is God's law, but is theonomy and theonomist, are they the same? So the belief in God's law and a theological system known as theonomy, are they the same thing?
No, they're not. That's just equivocation. They're not clarifying what their terms mean and stuff like that. But no, yeah. You can have people being with it like dispensationalism. You could define it in one way. And if you don't, and they could say, I'm a covenantalist, not a dispensationalist. You could define it. Let's see. Maybe we could do that right now. Make me make it so that I'm a dispensationalist, that God works differently in different times. Yeah, I would agree with that. Oh, dispensationalist.
Well, what? When you believe there's a future for Israel.
I believe there's a future for Israel.
Dispensationalist.
That's dispensational. But it's also, but not as common within covenantalism.
That's true. But,
so therefore, I guess I'm a dispensationalist covenantalist.
Yeah. You know, but what you end up seeing is people that when that argument is a fallacy of equivocation because they're using the word theonomy, which means God's law. And they created a theological system that they call theonomy. And so they're equivocating those two words, but they have two different meanings for them. And because you believe in God's law does not mean you believe in the theological system. They're different.
Right.
And that's something that gets people because they go, well, you believe in God's law, don't you? Yes. Well, you're a theonomist then. And they go, oh, okay. I didn't know that. Oh, look at this. You have a happy birthday, Matt. On like that.
Thanks.
So now,
today's the 5th. Yeah. So I thought it was Sunday, but it'll be Monday. Yeah.
You know, your birthday has a way of bringing back a very black memory to me. Black ice, that is.
Oh, yeah. That's true. For my 60th birthday, everybody came out. We had a 60th birthday party. It was a lot of fun. Driving home one night, and what, I'm going to hear your version of it. I'm going to hear how you say it.
Well, okay, so we went to the party, which was at Chad Pridmore's church, if I remember correctly.
No, it was a different church, but it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun there.
I forget. I thought it was Chad's church, but okay. So we're at the church. We're downstairs. We go to leave, and it had gotten. I mean, while we're in the church. It was raining and froze, and we did have a dilemma, Matt. If you remember correctly, we drove out there because we were bringing stuff to set up the room, and so we kept going back and forth between your house and Nathan's house, and then what ended up happening was when we went to leave, we realized that because people were coming, like I think you drove me over, and then I stayed there with Yim. And we were setting some things up while you went and got your wife. And we had several trips and people came over. But then when we went to leave, we realized you didn't have enough room in the car for all the people you actually brought over. And your car was full. I think that all the cars were kind of full. We had to split Yemen, my wife and I, up into two separate cars.
Yeah.
So you have a friend that is very well trained.
Right? In driving.
He's a Border Patrol agent, and it was icy or retired, I should say now. And so what ended up happening was I'd suggest that she takes a ride with David because Dave is going to be the safest driver.
Yeah.
And I went with Luke.
And you're in Luke's car. I'm driving with my wife.
Yep.
So three different separate cars, and everybody was staying at my house.
Yeah, that's right. Everyone was staying at your house, so we had four cars all together that we were going home in. And part of the problem was that we had to take we brought stuff to the church in separate trips, but we were trying to take it all home in one. So your back seat was all filled, and so the interesting thing was is I'm with Luke, and Luke all of a sudden just starts sliding.
Yeah,
and I mean he's just. And I'm literally as he literally slid from the right lane all the way to the left, and how he's sliding back toward the right, and we're only what like a quarter of a mile to the exit going downhill, and we're kind of just sliding in and out, and we're just going and I'm just sitting there and I watched Luke miss, I mean just barely. Slide past three cars, didn't hit any of them. And just as I'm like,
Dave, the same thing.
Yeah, Dave had the same thing I heard. And so
he never hit anybody.
I'm sitting there thinking, Luke was just getting control of the car again. I can see the exit ramp and I'm like, I think we're going to make it. I'm like, this is just great. And all of a sudden, in the corner of my eye, I see a car come in from the right. And it was like slow motion, like, where there's no way we're going to avoid this. And boom, hits the car. This other vehicle kept going and shoots off. Luke gets control of the car, pulls over to the side of the road.
Yeah, and then that car bangs into another car.
Bangs into another car. Yeah, and I didn't see that part because Luke pulled over right away. We went, we checked the damage. You know, we both looked at each other, and I'm like, "Are you okay, man?" He's like, "Yeah, are you okay, man?" Yeah. And then Luke looks at me and goes, "I think that was Matt Slick that hit us." And I went, "What?" I said, "It couldn't be." He's like, "Okay, let's not say anything in case it was." So we get back in the car. We start driving, and we're now like, I don't know, maybe 100. Well, we were just 100 yards now from the exit, and I see my wife standing outside with Dave outside of his car. And I'm like, "Luke, pull over. Dave and my wife are, you know, must have got hit." So he pulls over, and we walk over, and Dave goes, "Matt Slick hit me." And Luke goes, "I think he hit me too."
Yep. So from my perspective,
what's the story with the officer?
Yeah. So what happened was, we're coming up, and everybody was ahead of me, and we're coming up, and I see the brake lights everywhere. So I let up off the gas and just started coasting down, because if you hit the brakes, you're going to start spinning. And I could see cars sliding. So I knew it hit black ice. So I tapped my brakes super lightly, and the car would just fishtail a little bit, but you know, I had control of it. And so I see this car, it was Luke's car, he was coming into my lane a little, and I'm coming over into his lane, hit him, and then went off into another car and hit Dave, hit all the guys who were staying with me.
And so we're waiting because the police officer wants to take a report. And the problem is we're like, we really just want to go. And so finally you walked over to the police officer because we said, "Can we go?" We like, you know, we're all hit by the same guy and we know who he is. It's not a business. Yes, handle it. And he goes, "No, you can stay." And we were, because there were, I think there were like 20 cars in the accident.
Yeah, there was just quite a few. Some were turned around, some were kind of crunched. It really, and thing was, coming up over that hill, and that's when they hit the black ice. So you're already going fast, and yeah, it was just one of those things.
And there was a van that lost its door. Like, they must have opened the door and someone lost control and took off a door. So the officer was dealing with more of the people that were.
But another accident happened while we were waiting there.
Yes, that's right. Right in front of with the officer. Yeah. When we were talking to the officer. And so eventually you walked up to the officer and you were just like, can we get going? Because like, I hit all these guys. They're staying at my house. And the officer just looked at you and said, "What?" You're like, "Yeah, I mean, they're friends of mine. I hit each one of them. But you know, they're all staying at my house. They're visiting me for my birthday." You know, and he was like, "Wait, you hit all the cars of guys staying in your house?" He's like, yeah, you know, I treat my friends right. Or you said something like that.
Well, they were all confirming it.
Let us go.
Everybody was confirming it. And we go, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, okay, see ya." And that was it.
Oh, all right. So we have another question here, Matt. If I can, I got to scroll up and find where it is. All right, here you go. Ethan asks the question, "Matt, can you explain Amil?"
Amillennialism is the position that the literal thousand-year view is not correct, but that the term thousand is figurative, and that the millennial kingdom has existed since Christ was here on earth. During that time, Satan was bound, and some amillennialists hold that Satan's been let loose relatively recently in history, world wars and famines, earthquakes all over the place. And that at the return of Christ will be the consummation of the ages. And that's the position I hold, is that we're in the millennial reign of Christ now. It's a figurative thousand, not a literal thousand.
You know, an interesting thing with the amillennial view, so many will turn to someone like Augustine to say that, you know, to see the teachings of amillennialism and some of the views. However, an interesting thing with Augustine is there's many dispensationalists that turn to Augustine as well, because the thing that was interesting with Augustine is he did believe in a literal thousand years. He just thought we were in it. And so many of the views that you see of the way that like the dispensationalists would look with a literal 1,000 years, they could look to Augustine. But as well, an amillennial can look to Augustine because like after 1,000 AD, I want to say Pope Innocent, but I can't remember if that was the Pope. That's where you saw the shift from a literal to 1,000 because, well, where was Christ? They thought he would literally come in 1,000 AD and it went and got, you know, passed and kind of like all the people that thought he was coming in 2,000, right? But when that passed, they started to read Augustine and see that basically if you take it as a figurative, then you could argue this, all the same things that Augustine was arguing for the millennium, just see it as a figurative period of time. And so it's kind of interesting that both camps go back to Augustine because, you know, this is one of the things, and you have a quote that's very good for folks to remember. My church father can beat up your church father. Why do you say that? Why can both groups look at a guy like Augustine and both find their theological system rooted there?
Because church fathers say all kinds of things. They contradict themselves. They contradict each other. And so, you know, my church father can beat up your church father, which means you can find for church fathers basically to say most anything. They're not that cattywampus all over the place, but that's basically the idea. So there's a lot of good, you know, there's good positions, argumentations in lots of groups and lots of things. But that's what I say about the church fathers. Catholics use them a lot, but I don't. They contradict each other. So
there you go. All right. Well, I don't know where everybody was tonight. No one came in with questions. So, folks, we're here to answer your questions, not just to trigger Matt with, you know, Black Liberation Theology.
Yeah, I'm too tired tonight. It's just, a lot going on. But sorry, I'm just kind of a lump on a log tonight.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm trying to see if I can find one last quote. Let's see. Now, this last quote I'll give you, Matt, is kind of an interesting one because what you have with this quote is, you know, people would argue, you know, when it comes to, you know, being treated as subhuman, we have a different group of people who were treated subhuman in a more recent time period. And that would be what you end up seeing with the Jewish people.
And Asians.
Yeah. And so what you have, though, with the Jews is they were exterminated because their Judaism, and they were slaves. You'd think that people would be arguing, you know, for that. James Cone said this, and remember, this was in the 60s, so this was not long after the Holocaust that he writes this, but quote, "It is interesting that most people do not understand why Jews can hate Germans, why can they not understand why black people who have been deliberately and systematically dehumanized or murdered by the structure of this society hate white people," unquote. Now, there's a difference there. The Jews hated the Germans, but, you know, that actually lasted a generation. And so what you end up seeing there is, you have, you know, nowadays you don't see that same hatred for Jews for the Germans. I mean, I actually have a German son-in-law now. And actually, not only do I have a German son-in-law, but Matt, do you know what her initials are? Her initials now that she got married are SS. When I realized that,
does he speak German?
Traumatic. No, I don't think he does, but I should ask him. But what you end up seeing there is that you don't have that hatred for the Jews, for the Germans anymore. That hatred was for specific people that did a specific thing to specific people. Once those people passed on, there wasn't the hatred. That hatred wasn't passed on from generation to generation to generation. So you don't see that hatred today. And I mean, my parents lived during that time. Okay. And so we're one generation removed and the hatred's already gone. So that would be the argument I'd have with this. He's saying, well, look, people understand that the Jews would have hatred for the Germans. And he's speaking of the Jews who lived through that at that time. But you see, now one generation after, what James Cone doesn't realize is that hatred isn't there. And so, but he's still appealing to a hatred that there's no justification for, because he's saying the hatred is for a system, a structure of society that dehumanizes. Well, no, that was the case, but that case doesn't continue.
Yeah, it's done away with.
Yeah.
There might be pockets of it here and there, but there's pockets of it of all kinds of things. Against Asians, they were mistreated. American Indians, they were badly mistreated at the formation of this country for years. Everybody was. Whites were pretty bad in a lot of areas, but doesn't mean all whites are bad. And a lot of whites risked their lives to save people of different races. Fact,
here's the thing. So there's many whites who risked their lives to end slavery.
Yeah.
And save blacks that were slaves and you know, try to get them to help them to escape and things like that. But you know what? You know what doesn't get talked about? You know how after the whites came in and captured many of the Africans that were on the coastals, do you know how they got the blacks that were more inland?
Oh, they had blacks go chase them.
That's right. What you end up seeing is that the majority of slaves were captured by black tribes that were working with white slavers. So the white slavers wouldn't go after their folks, but they would go and get slaves for the whites.
So, and they would often get the dregs of society and get rid of them
that way. Yeah. And so the question then becomes, so who do we blame for the racism, the racist slavery that we had? Can we blame only whites? No, you can't. Because there were black or Africans that were making money and getting privilege by kidnapping. They were the ones that were doing the kidnapping at that point and bringing them and enslaving them. And the whites paid them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the whites, it got to a point where the white ships would come in and they would already have a whole bunch of Africans already in cages waiting.
It's horrible.
So this is the thing that people with these issues, they think it's so clear cut, and it's not. These things are not the way so many people want to lay it out. And that's the thing. It's, you know, these issues are complex. It's like when people say so many people were killed by religious wars. You know, there's so many other factors that go into those wars. You can't just say, oh, it's because of this, because there's other factors in it. You have, you know, political things going on. You have different, you know, depending on the wars, you have different tribal things that may have nothing to do with the religion, but they use that. I mean, there's so much there. So it's not as clear cut as people like to say.
That's right.
So with that, I guess we'll close out. I think that we're going to be coming into the holiday season, and I know that I'm going to be having to take a break because I'll be doing a little bit of travel toward the end of the year. And so I think next week may be the last of the episodes that we will be addressing or having an Apologetics Live. I hope that some of you guys would come in and ask some questions. Makes it more lively for a live show when people ask questions. So not just in the chat, but actually asking the questions. So next time, folks, come on in, join. Just go to apologeticslive.com and join us. Again, I'll remind you guys, if you go to, I should remind you guys first off about our Israel trip. If you want to join us for Israel, we're going to be going to Israel March 2021. And, you know, we're going to be having, I mean, Matt, have you been to Israel? I don't even know.
Yeah. Yep. It was great.
Okay, so if folks go to 2021israeltrip.com, you will be able to, from there, get the all the information to join us for the Israel trip. Another thing to let you guys know is, again, the theological and evangelism giveaway we're doing. Go to bit.ly/CPC contest. That's bit.ly.com/CPC. That stands for Christian Podcast Community. So CPC contest. bit.ly.com/CPC contest. And you will be able to get the details about that contest that we're running. And I hope you guys go there and share stuff as often so that you will enter. There's over 750 resources, dollars worth of resources being given away. I think we're actually over $800 worth of resources now. So I encourage you guys to check that out. So until next week, remember to strive to make today an eternal day for the glory of God. We'll see you next time.